Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Hello, Dr. Trisha Peterson. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am... Interested to learn more about this topic. I know we've talked about it, and for some reason, this is a concept where my brain is like, triangulation, yes, okay. And then all the ideas float away. So I should be super useful this episode. But yeah. You have a lot of knowledge. I am sure I have a life story to go along with it. So without further ado, I'm going to turn things over to you.
Ooh, I like it. And I'm thinking of that song. Now I can't even remember the real words because what I'm thinking is triangulation. Triangulation today. Okay. So first of all, the thing I want to start out with is that triangulation is a super complicated topic as far as I'm concerned when we look at pop psychology. Because in popular psychology, so that's what we pass around on memes on social media, is the big conversation is that triangulation is a narcissistic behavior, which it is. Narcissists do participate in triangulation. But I kind of want to point out before we even get started on this conversation that anytime a person or a family system is in a place of chaos and uncertainty, like we talked about the last episode, then we are living off of fight or flight. Our fight or flight responses are automatically on. If our home environment is chaotic, if there's a lot of conflict, if there's a lot of uncertainty, we are just by nature on guard. And anybody who is on guard falls into narcissistic behaviors. So I want to think about narcissism as not just narcissistic personality disorder. So that's the very extreme that we talk about when we say, oh, that person's a narcissist. There is a spectrum, just like there is a spectrum on every other social dynamic.
Everything.
Narcissism is the exact same. It's a spectrum. And anytime we're in fight or flight, we step onto the narcissistic spectrum.
So I'm so curious because I was in a fight or flight stage for so long. I remember going to my craniosacral therapist, Agnieszka, for my first appointment, and she put her hands on my feet. And the first thing she said was, your body's in fight or flight right now. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm so relaxed. I'm here on a therapy table, self-care, look at me go. But so what is this? What is the other side of the spectrum of narcissism? What, I don't want to call it like low level narcissism, but I'm trying to make it sound nicer for me because I'm like, oh shoot, I'm a narcissist too. Oh my gosh. So,
yeah, and I, you know what? You just used the exact perfect words. Anytime we label ourselves with I am. So first of all, I'm going to say I am purist. Anything that we put after the word I am is what we're telling our soul. Mm-hmm. We're putting a fingerprint on our soul. I am a narcissist, or I'm behaving narcissistically. I'm exhibiting narcissism behaviors, something like that. I am narcissist. That's a horrible thing to say to anybody. I don't care how far you are on the narcissistic spectrum. Mm. We've created such a stigma around this word. Again, it goes all back to stigma.
Right.
But yes, anytime we're in that defensive conflict chaos mode, we head into triangulation. So that's a really great example. So we can triangulate with people, with things, with experiences with data, data triangulation is really common, which is in your situation, you were married to a man exhibiting all of the characteristics of a cis hetero white woman, but inside you had this conflict of all of these other thoughts of, am I a lesbian? Am I attracted to women? Am I miserable? Like, what is wrong with me? So then you were probably doing a lot of research. You were looking for information about what's wrong with me, or what does it mean if I'm doing this? So in that case, you're triangulating with data. Your sense of self and your lived experience of self were in conflict with each other. So you were pulling in data.
This seems similar, and maybe it's just because it's the same geometric shape, but to the identity discovery gap of like outside self, inside self, you know, ideal self. Also, just to add a little asterisk to my research, because I am not a researcher. And so I don't know what I put in my Google searches, but for me, all I was able to figure out was that Elton John was also in a heterosexual marriage. And I was like, okay, it's me and Sir Elton in this together. And that's where my research stopped. But yeah, wow. Okay, back to triangulation.
Remember that in your book. So, but the reason I want to bring all of that up is because one thing that I think is so hard about trying to break down these really complicated concepts. I mean, researchers spend years and years and years studying triangulation. And then you have, whether it's researchers or lay people, like it doesn't matter, but you have people who are trying to break down all this information into a funnel and give it just a couple of words. So one thing that I just really want to caveat all this with is we're all going to find places in our lives where we triangulate. It doesn't mean that we're bad parents or that we're bad spouses or that we're bad people, but the power of knowing some of this stuff is then being able to recognize it in yourself rather than diagnose others.
Right.
Does that kind of make sense? So it's going to be really easy over the next 20 minutes for people to go, oh, that's my spouse. Maybe. But look at it with yourself. So like one of the things that I noticed as I was preparing for this episode, one of the places that my kids or my ex-husband might feel like I triangulated was a lot of times I would see things and I would say, like, I remember this with my kids. They would come to me and they would say, well, can I do sleepovers? Were a big one. I was really against sleepovers with friends. And my kids would say, can't we please just do a sleepover? I'll be good. I'll be good. I promise nothing's going to go wrong. And I would be like, show me the research. Show me the research that confirms that doing sleepovers at your age is safe, is a wise thing. And like, I always kind of thought I was just being kind of funny, or or I was saying, I need evidence that this is a good thing because I have no evidence. But in a way, I was triangulating by saying, okay, I'm going to deflect this conversation to the research. You prove to me through research that this is okay, rather than me just owning my boundaries and saying, as a mom, I do not feel good about sleepovers until you're 20. So that's an example of how I would have done it.
I am still a little fuzzy here. So triangulation is when we inside are in opposition with something on the outside, and we're looking to another outside source for the answer to what the truth is.
So when we're triangulating ourselves, then yes, we're looking for an outside source to settle the dispute within ourselves. And it's not that it's bad to do your research, but the decisions still need to come from your soul, yourself.
Okay.
Yeah. So gathering data isn't bad. Brené Brown calls it polling. Anytime we're polling, what do you think I should do? What do you think I should do?
Right.
Then that's triangulating ourselves.
Okay.
And we do that. But the thing that's more important is recognizing where in our homes we start to triangulate. So we're starting this conversation on the very low end of the spectrum of triangulation, which is using data or trying to bring in. So yeah, in this case, my kids and I were in conflict about what to do about sleepovers. So I was trying to bring in a third source, data, research, instead of just holding my boundaries. So it's a way for me to deflect the decision.
And it's also one of those opportunities where our intuition may be speaking to us and we're overriding the intuition because, and I know this is something that I really did struggle with for a long time. And I realized that the more I didn't listen to my intuition when it was speaking, the quieter the voice got until it was really hard to hear it. And then I didn't know, like, is that my intuition speaking or am I hearing voices in my head now? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see why that really creates a problem when you can gather all the data, but you put all of your trust in an outside source and not in yourself.
Yeah. And again, like I said, for this, I was afraid of the conflict with my kids, or I didn't want to have the conflict with my kids about sleepovers. I was tired of the conversation. You know, I have 6 kids. Imagine how many times I had this exact same conversation. I didn't love it. I wanted to pull my eyeballs out. And so I would say, go to the gym. And I did that a lot, like I, in so many things. If you can find me research that says it's okay. I'm sure my kids were like, shut the f*** up.
Oh, they all don't have PhDs right now. I don't know. They're like, I was primed for this my whole life.
I know. I think I'll end up with a couple with PhDs, but
probably.
But the reason, so then that's kind of the low end of the spectrum. But what happens is the more conflict there is, the more uncertainty there is, the more chaos there is, then we start really triangulating in our family systems a lot. And parents can triangulate by going to the kids and bringing them into the argument, you know? So 2 parents might be having a conversation. The parents may be in an argument about buying a car, let's say. Are we going to buy a car for this kid who just wrecked their car? Whatever. That's one that happened in our house. So it's fresh on my mind. But then the parent might go and talk to friends that say, our kids have to have a car. Or the parent might go to the kid and might gather all of this data about why the kid needs to have a car. I go to swim. I have a job. I have friends. And then, you know, the partner will come back and say, oh yeah, I talked to the kid and these are all the reasons they need a car. So I know you don't want to buy him a car, but we're going to buy him a car. And so all of a sudden the parents are now more in conflict. And the one parent maybe that didn't want to buy a car is being forced to silence how they feel because they have this third person now who's involved in the argument. And so now they're having to, it's almost like they have to arm wrestle both people to be able to.
I was going
to
say, it's like trying to build up your team and be like, well, we outnumber you, so we must be the right ones.
And in fam, that's exactly what it is. One of the easiest ways that you can recognize if you're triangulating within your family or your friend group is to recognize, are there teams being formed?
Wow.
Are there sides being taken?
I just got goosebumps because several examples from several friends right now and different things are going to popped into my mind. I think it's so easy, especially when you have kids or if your own parents are very much involved in your family, people feel like they need to fall on one side of the line or the other when it comes to decisions, as opposed to like, here are the data and okay, you've got this.
Yeah. And why it is so important when we're talking about LGBTQ families is because a lot of times a kid will come out to one parent.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. But not the second parent. And then automatically the parent that knows is triangulated. Mm. And it's on the spectrum of triangulation. So I'm not saying it's always bad because the kid does need a safe space. But I think we talked about this last week in the uncertainty episode. It's really important to set a boundary around that triangulation. So, okay, you've come out to me. I now know, and I'm really grateful, and I am going to be your safe space. But we need to talk about this again in 3 months because I can only keep a secret from dad for this long because now you're asking me to hide something that now I know. And so it's okay if that kiddo needs time, but it needs to be contained.
Yeah.
And then at the 3-month mark, you might come back and you might talk and the kid might say, I'm not ready. And then we have to decide, okay, now what are we going to do? How do we want to handle this in the healthiest way possible?
Right. And I'm glad you explained that too, that it's not a parent giving a child an ultimatum of like, listen, for my comfort at this timeline, it's just a promise of we need to check back in on this because it's affecting me as well. And we have to have a plan.
Yeah.
And that plan may change, but we need to be in communication about what's going on. So.
And I think one of the things that's really, really challenging is our world has not really set us up to have language around two people. It's called bidirectional relationships, but our general society hasn't really set us up to be very friendly about this bidirectional relationship, which is if my kid is having an experience and I say, oh, I just feel really, really stressed about this experience my child is going through. Our world doesn't actually allow us to say that without saying my child makes me stressed. Like an example would be, I'll share this one from my life, but my daughter was going through something really, really challenging. And she was in a high stress danger situation. And for quite a while afterwards, if I said anything like, yeah, I was really worried, or I was really stressed, or that took a toll on my wellness, she would say things like, well, wait, why were you stressed? You were in this situation. And that was just her own fight or flight, those defenses. Again, I'm just going to say fight or flight, narcissistic spectrum, automatically. Mm-hmm. But then it was like a couple of years later that another daughter was in a dangerous situation. And this same daughter came to me and she said, ah, now I get it. Like, I get it, because knowing about the other sister put a lot of stress on this child. But because we don't really have that language, a lot of times so let's go back to the LGBTQ. We have a child who comes out to mom and says, mom, I really am attracted to members of the same sex. I just feel more comfortable. I know I'm born female, but I feel more comfortable dressing more like a male. Like whatever the conversation is, we come and we give that information to mom. And if mom says, okay, that's going to put some conflict in my relationship with dad, I'm going to have an experience here also of stress and worry for you. Very often the child will get defensive. Mm-hmm. Well, why are you stressed? Or whatever, you know? And so then the mom feels really guilty. So many moms feel shame for having an emotional response to their children's worries.
Yeah. Well, so if I can interject a little bit, and again, this was just kind of my experience because I'm very much seeing myself in the coming out process and talking to my mom. And I remember her saying like, well, you know, I don't remember her exact words, but basically like, well, this is a lot for me.
Yeah.
And all I could think of is like, oh, it's a lot for you. Imagine being the person going through it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think where our trouble really developed is that we were both trying to lean on each other for support as well. And I know we've talked about this in other episodes with the ripples in the water of like, you can't cling to support with someone who is also going through the same situation and in close proximity to you. And so that's where we got into even more conflict was, oh, you're struggling? Well, I'm struggling. It was like a struggle fest.
Because it's that conflict again.
Yeah. And who's allowed to struggle? Who has the right to struggle? Who's earned, you know, these bad or sad feelings right now? It was a strange time.
I remember sitting in a therapy session and the therapist saying, so basically what I'm hearing you say is you have a lot of resentment. And I said, I have a ton of resentment. But it's not that I resent my ex-husband, or it's not that I resent my kids. It's I have resentment in my body. But most of the time when we hear somebody say that, again, like you said, we put those defense walls up. And then all of a sudden the spouse or the kid says, well, why do you resent me so much? Not what I said. I said, I have resentment. But we don't hold space for that. We really don't have a dialogue for that. And like I said, that's what it's called, the bidirectional relationship. So something happens to person A in the family, and person B will have an experience that is unique to them. But because of that conflict, it's like you said, it's this butting of heads. Well, which one of us is suffering more instead of, oh, we have two people suffering individually. So again, that's where this triangulation can come in. Is so if your mom brought in, let's say, your best friend and started complaining and blah, 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 and now your best friend has to choose between supporting your mom or supporting you, that becomes triangulation. In your situation, your mom might have said, is it okay if I talk to my pastor about this and just bring somebody in to support me through my journey? Your response, yes or no. Her response, I may not be able to hear very much about your journey then until I can wrap my brain around this for myself. So it becomes about, really about, do two people have healthy enough communication skills to work through even how are we going to work through the conflict? So not even how are we going to resolve the conflict, but how are we going to journey through the conflict?
So in that case, so I'm still trying to understand when triangulation can be helpful and when it's harmful, because in that scenario, you're saying it is good. You need the outside source. You need that additional point because the people can't be a support to each other.
Yes. So again, the easiest way to decide is, are we forming teams here? Or are we forming a support network?
Okay.
So in this case, let's say the mom says, can I talk to my pastor? The pastor is now a third unrelated party who is there just to support your mom. He's not going to come in and try to convince you not to be gay. He's not
going to. Maybe he did, though.
Maybe he did. But so pastor's a bad one then. Let's say that. The therapist isn't going to pull you in and talk to you. The therapist isn't going to tell you that you're bad or send you a letter.
Right.
You're right. Pastor is a bad choice because that can go wrong in a lot of ways. But if that's the only person the parent has, but again, that's where the communication can come in. The child can say no, because that pastor knows me also. And I'm not ready to come out. I came out to you.
Yeah.
So first of all, the telltale sign is, are we forming teams? Teams are very different than networks. A network is a web that supports the system. A team is two sides with a very clear line down the middle.
Do you think that's where people struggle most now? Is that sometimes the people that they lean on for support feel like they have to pick a side? I mean, I know I found that in my own family, where we would have people who loved both my ex-husband and me, and they felt like they had to, I mean, literally words out of their mouth was, well, how can I also support you if I have to be on his side? Like, I have to pick a side. Yeah. And it was bizarre to me of like, well, why do you have to do that? But I think a lot of people default to that. And also sometimes it's hard, like, if you haven't gone through a big trauma situation before, you don't maybe have that safety net. You don't know what the resources are out there that can support you, as opposed to, yep, you're right and they're wrong and we're going to do more push-ups and we'll go get them in the next game, Tiger. Don't worry.
Well, that's why I wanted to have this conversation so badly, is because A, the uncertainty just breeds triangulation. But B, because I think triangulation is so misunderstood, because the way it's talked about in pop psychology is it is only narcissists that perform this or create this. Same with gaslighting, triangulation. But it's the exact same thing, that we have this image in our minds that these are all really big things that only bad people do. Mm-hmm. Really, really good people triangulate. Really, really good people gaslight. It is a spectrum, and it is a natural consequence of that fight or flight. And I think that we've been living in fight or flight, all of us, for years and years and years. But 2020 knocked us all into fight or flight. Every single person in the world, whether they want to accept it or not, got knocked into fight or flight on some level of the spectrum. And even you could see triangulation even in the conversations about the vid and about vaccinations and all of it. There was tons of team taking.
Right.
And because there was team taking, side taking, whatever, we stopped being able to just hear each other on a very clear one-on-one level. And so we all had this triangulation going on. It's really, really common, but it can be prevented.
Let's hear more about that then. So then the prevention of it is to find, I don't want to say unbiased sources, but supportive sources that can also remain neutral.
Yeah. Okay. So when we kind of what we talked about with the ripple effect, every single one of us is the center of our own universe. Every single one of us is that point where the rock hits the lake. Mm-hmm. Our first ring is those people that are up closest to us. That's our siblings, our parents, maybe our aunts and uncles, grandparents, if we're really close. But usually aunts, uncles, and neighbors fall in the second rung. And then the third rung is like our community members. So it's people like therapists or sports teams, coaches. A lot of kids come out to their coaches before they come out to their parents. So like that's that third rung. And then on the outside of that third rung, you have things like community resources. And so, yeah, it's about looking and saying, okay, where are we in the system and how can we go one layer, at least one layer out for support? But the best way to do it is to be able to do it together. And again, it's that open communication that we all are going to have to learn how to have because we haven't been trained to speak to each other this way. For the mom to be able to say to the kid, all right, this is going to be a challenge for me for this reason and this reason. It's going to be a challenge for me because I have to process this a little bit on my own. And it's going to be a challenge to me because now I know something that dad doesn't know. And that puts me keeping a secret. And it's something that dad and I have decided we don't want to do.
Right.
So I can set a boundary around the secret 3 months. At 3 months, we're going to come back and talk about when are we going to tell dad? And this is going to be a struggle for me. So can I go outside the system and have somebody I can talk to? The child might say, I can give you 3 months, yes or no, but please make it somebody who doesn't know me.
Right. And I love in these situations where it's where people are having a healthier way of navigating through a conflict that there's not the blame on the other person. Like, yes, you may feel hard feelings towards the child or the other person of like, oh my gosh, she brought me into this situation. I didn't want to deal with this. And this is something that I've been trying to work on in my own conflicts in life is like to pause the emotional piece for a moment and say, what's the end goal here? Like yes. Sometimes we get so caught up in the drama of the moment and it's like, well, how do I want this to resolve? And then also going back to the love you have for that person and knowing that the words that you say are going to have an impact on them, especially in very tender, sensitive times. And so taking that pause to make sure that you're speaking from a place of love, like, I love you and we're going to figure this out, as opposed to, why did you do this to me? Do you know how hard this is on me? Save that for the outer rung. Like that's, you know, the person that you can emote on. And I know it's hard. I mean, like I said, this is something that I am working on now in all of my conflicts and struggles is to just be able to take that brief pause to just step back and say, what's the end goal here that we're working towards? And then I know that we'll both get to that end place better if we're both coming from a place of love. I want you to be able to resolve this. I want me to be able to resolve this.
Yeah.
It's hard.
And like I said, triangulation can be, most often we see it between people, right? So you're triangulating child, parent, friend, and you're bringing the third party in to validate how you're feeling or to prove the other person wrong. It's that side taking. That triangulation can occur with people. It can occur with places and it can be things. It can be data. It can be, oh, I read this book. I can't tell you how many of my clients say to me, I read this book and I told my husband he needed to read it too.
Oh my gosh, I do that all the time.
Yes, because we're using the book to try to show our partner what we think is wrong with them.
My apologies, Jen. You are perfect in every way.
Yeah.
Sometimes the books are just so interesting though. Okay. Anyway, no, well, I get what you're saying.
You see what, but the, yeah. Are you using the book to prove your point to another person? This was years and years and years ago, but my sister had a really, really messy divorce and somebody that loved her very much gave her a book on forgiveness. You know, this is just really important information. And my sister wasn't ready yet to forgive her ex-spouse.
Yeah.
And forgiveness can eat us alive. And when we're on the outside watching people spiral in hate and resentment and rage and whatever, we want to give them the tools to forgive, right? So we want to shove all this information. But when we do that, we're negating the fact that this person that we love very much is having a very tough experience. We silence their experience. We silence their story by giving them a solution. Mm. So we've brought the book in as the third party to prove that we are right. You need to forgive.
Move on to the next phase. We don't feel comfortable here. We need to move on to the next phase.
Yeah. Instead of just sitting, I mean, I've said this before on this thing, any story that gets repeated is a story that has still not been heard. I will only repeat a story if I have not been heard in my story.
That's why I had to write a book.
It's why you had to write a book.
Wow. All right.
Okay. Yeah. And we do it a lot when there's divorce. I had a conversation with a friend of mine just a couple of days ago, and I said, divorce actually is not as hard on children as we think it is. It's the triangulation that happens with the divorce that's hard on kids.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So that's what I have for y'all on triangulation. It's a spectrum.
Fabulous. Yeah, I will probably re-listen to this episode several more times because I think the concept is a lot more, I mean, gosh, we could probably go on about this conversation so much more. So many different scenarios, but again, recognition is one of the first steps. And
it's a form of manipulation. And again, manipulation is a hard word because we hear the word manipulation and we think, oh, only bad people manipulate.
Yeah. All right, humans, thank you for this episode. And I know we've got some exciting ones coming up. But also for anyone who didn't listen to our episode on uncertainty trauma, I think that was episode 40, definitely go back and listen to it. We got a lot of comments from people and it was very impactful to folks. And I hope you find the same.
I agree. And we better also thank everybody because we hit a major milestone this past month with 3,000 plus downloads.
Yes. Amazing. So keep sharing. I mean, really, it does so much for the podcast when you leave a rating or review or you share it on your social media or you just tell a friend, hey, I listened to this episode and I thought it was great. I'm not triangulating right now. I'm just sharing some good information. I'm going to have to noodle through this more. Okay. Anyways, on that note,
all have y'all a great have a day. Great day.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveintheque@gmail.com. Until next time, Queue Crew.